with all the cork sniffing and tasting terms like varietals and bouquet and more complicated stuff than that, the world of wine can be a little intimidating. So it might be hard to imagine actually making our own wine.
For today's Teach Me What You Know segment, we've got Alan Fitzgerald with us, who's been making his own wine for years. He's the president and winemaker at Fisher King Winery in Mount Horeb, and he's joining us now in studio to talk about how you can get started making your own wine. Alan, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, can you tell us how you first got started, got into making your own wine?
Well, I got an interest in winemaking very early on. Both of my parents are European, and, you know, my dad's Irish, my mom's German, and so we had wine as part of our family culture. I remember at age 4 sipping wine at the dinner table, and quite frankly, at age 4, not thinking very much of it, but but it was, you know, kind of lost some of its taboo or its, you know, secretive thing about, you know, having wine. And in fact, when I was in high school, I remember the encouragement of my mother. I was expressing an interest in, how do you make wine? What is that all about? She encouraged me to actually start exploring that and learning about it. So as early as high school, her only bit of advice to me back then was, well, just don't get carried away. And for the most part, I didn't, for the most part. But and then I went off and got a biology degree and continued to make wine over all the years. I think I switched over to beer when I was in college because you can make it a lot quicker than you can wine, and a little less expensively. So, but then when I got out of college and went on and got my business degree and all that and started working in the real business world, I still continued to make wine all the time. And I took winemaking courses, got involved in the UC Davis certificate program and things like that. So I've been making wine forever and ever and ever and ever. And I finally got around to opening up my own commercial winery.
And when we think wine countries, we think, Mediterranean, California, Chile, Australia, places with lots of warmth. And I know we've got lots of wineries here in the state, of course. What are some of the challenges, though, for hobbyists or the pros making making wine in a winter state?
Well, you can make wine any time of the year. I mean, you do it indoors, so mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like you have to be outside, And the only time you're outside really is if you're growing grapes, your own grapes, or if you're bringing them in and you want to crush them outside, But I don't have any friends named Lucy or Ethel anyway, so we don't kind of do it that old fashioned way. We try to keep all the extraneous fungus out of the wine, much less coming from crushing it around with your feet and everything. But well, for winemakers, whether you are an amateur, a home winemaker, or whether you're a commercial winemaker, the very, very best ingredients, the caviar of winemaking, is fresh fruit. And in this case, in most cases of wine, certainly not all of it, it's grapes, but also other fruits. You can make wine out of just about anything vegetative. In some cases, whether you can or you should are two different things. But in any event, there are some really lovely wines made not from grapes, mm-hmm. but from fruits and even vegetables. But you want, if you're doing grapes, you want the absolute ripest, exactly where you want them to be. You want them picked, and you want them right in your doorstep to be able to crush and press them and start turning them into wine. But for somebody getting started, or if you're in a place where you can't get a hold of grapes easily, and that only happens at harvest time, typically, in the fall, then you can start with concentrates and juices and things like that and start just practicing and playing around with that stuff.
Well, let's talk about getting started. Let's say you've got those perfectly ripe grapes, maybe some you grew on a small plot of your own land. What do you do next? How do you start?
Well, it's a big subject, even for, a home winemaker. Basically, you want to make sure that the grapes are ripened, that they are disease-free, that you've kind of kept track of them over the year. Maybe you sprayed them a little bit, hopefully with something relatively benign, but to keep some of the mold and other things off of them. And you've chased the birds away, and you've kept the Japanese beetles off of them, and you kept the rabbits from eating them, and the deer. I got to tell you, grape growing is not for the faint of heart, especially if you want to do it on a little larger scale. Everything eats grapes or grape vines and leaves. If it isn't all the wide spectrum of molds and things like that, it's birds, it's rodents, it's bugs, it's many different things. So if you're actually, and then of course there's all the aspects of proper pruning and trellising and training, leaf pulling, canopy management, fertilizing, mowing, and being on a potential spray regimen a little bit. This is if you get particularly serious, are some of the vineyards, the commercial vineyards around the state. But you grow the grapes to a point where their ripeness is where they should be, the acidity level is where it should be, they're nice and clean and beautiful and sweet. And at that point, the winemaker, or the viticulturist in this case, decides now it's time to harvest, and you harvest the grapes, and you then, depending on whether it's a red or a white, you treat them a little differently, but either way, you're going to crush them first. And crushing involves beating them up, turning them into a slurry, basically removing the stems, the nice green stems, which you don't really want in there because they can impart green flavors, phenolic flavors in your wine, which are undesirable. So you get rid of the stems as gently and as thoroughly as you can. If you're a small winemaker, you can maybe do it by hand, or, you know, you can also get a mechanical destemming crusher. But you crush them up, and that gives you a slurry of seeds and pulp and juice and skins, and that's called must. And if you're making a red wine, you pump that. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm so used to it now in a winery, pumping. If you're a home winemaker, you transfer that to a container to do primary fermentation, where you pitch the yeast on it. And if it's a white wine, I'm okay to keep talking?
Oh, yeah,
here,
but, yeah.
Okay.
Let's get the white.
And if it's a white wine, you're going to do the same thing. You're going to destem it and crush it and create that same must. But instead of immediately pumping it into a tank to start fermentation, you're actually going to put it through another process right before you do that, which is pressing. There's always crushing and there's always pressing. In almost all cases, not quite all, you have to always have those two. And so the pressing, rather than just beating it up and turning it into a mishmash, an oleo of all this stuff, it separates out, it squeezes out the juice from the solids. So with white wines, you're going to be putting that juice, that clear, sweet, beautiful, light white grape juice, into a tank and starting fermentation.
Well, I want to back up a little bit and get into gear here. And it sounds like I'd probably buy my fruit, first of all. But what's the basic starting kit if I want to experiment, dip my feet in, figuratively, not literally, to winemaking?
Well, the easiest thing to do, really, especially if you just want to get started, is to go to a local store, like right here in Madison, the Wine and Hop Shop. And actually, Dave Mitchell, who is the founder of the Wine and Hop Shop, also has Mitchell Vineyards. I'm just mentioning it down in Oregon. I'm sorry, Oregon, Wisconsin, not Oregon, the state. And he has a pick-your-own place. So in the fall, he has a lot of people coming out with their buckets, and they're picking the different grape varieties that they want, nice and fresh. He even has a little crusher and destemmer down there that he can take care of some of this stuff for you, and a press. So, but if you can't have access to grapes like that, you can go to any wine store, wine-making supply store, beer-making supply store, and you can find kits, or you can find them online. There's a whole wide range of mail-order places that have all these different kits available, and you basically buy the juice in concentrate form, and that's where you get the little kit in, and you take that juice, and you will put it into a carboy, and you will add yeast and put an airlock on it, and off you go. That's the basic. I mean, what makes wine is juice with, you know, flavorful compounds in it, sugar that's in the juice, and yeast. And the yeast, the whole process of fermentation, which is a biochemical process, can be quite complex, and there's many complex aspects to it. But in its simplest form, yeast takes the sugar from the grape juice and converts it into carbon dioxide, which just, in this case, you just dissipate. You don't use it for anything in a winery. And alcohol.
Right. And you got us to the point where we had our must, or whatever it was, into the vessel where it was going to be fermenting. So how long does it have to ferment?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to vary a little bit. You know, I mean, I guess if you're a college student, you can probably be drinking wine in a month. But if you want good wine...
50 years later.
Yeah, well, maybe not 50, but, you know, primary fermentation, there's two parts to the fermentation when you first get the yeast pitched into the wine. It's a very, very active primary fermentation. It's very, very active. It's boiling in a way. You look at the wine and the must, and it's just churning away. It's throwing off lots of CO2. It's exothermic. So on a bigger tank, you have to watch out for the heat. The heat management is important. On smaller little 5-gallon carboys, it's not that big a deal when you're a home winemaker. After about 2 or 3 weeks of that, it settles down. It's, you know, it's done a lot of really rapid, vigorous fermentation, conversion of sugar into alcohol. And then it settles down into a much slower secondary fermentation, anaerobic fermentation, which does not throw off a lot of heat. And it can, you know, you're going to be doing that for a couple months of anaerobic fermentation. It depends, really. There's, like an economist, it depends. Mm-hmm. Depends on the grape and the yeast and what you're doing. And then if you finish up a wine around then, if it's a red, you might want to put it in oak to oak mature it, little oak barrels if you're a home winemaker.
What does the oak do?
Well, the oak does two things. It adds oak flavors to it. It gives more depth. Oak flavors leach out into the wine, and that for some reds, that can be desirable. It also adds a number of other compounds like tannins, which give wine the astringency the sort of dryness to it. I look at the tannins as the equivalent in winemaking as hops are to beer a little bit, how they give it that dryness. And then the other thing is the oak barrels are breathable. You'll have air exchange and vapor exchange, and it actually oxidizes the wine. It matures it. It's called micro-oxidation, and it smooths out what might otherwise be an edgy wine. So the oak does those two things. It speeds up the aging process just enough so it makes the wine a little more nicer mouthfeel and drinkable, and it also adds those various compounds in, which for some reds can be a big enhancement.
Alan, what was it like? You were, I think you said, in high school when you made your first wine, when you had your first successful batch and tried it. What was it like?
Well, it was great, especially when you're in high school. At the very beginning, my standards weren't very high, and it's like we were drinking almost anything that I would make. You know, I'm sorry, that was then and this is now. No, of course, it was very gratifying, but the learning process, even now, I have quite a bit more experience in winemaking, and I'm always learning new things, and there's always times I get faced with new challenges. You can get into this as deep as you want or as superficially as you want, but it all starts with that first batch of wine or first two or three batches and reading some good winemaking books and maybe talking to some winemakers. And then there's also the Wisconsin Vintners Association, which is a large group of people who've all gotten together and have created the non-commercial, basically amateur winemakers group. And that's a very good group to be in touch with if you just want to start out making wine.
Alan, thank you so much for joining us. You've given us a lot to work with here, obviously a lot to learn, but we've got a little bit of a handle on it there. Yeah, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to Alan Fitzgerald, the president and winemaker at Fisher King Winery in Mount Horeb.